I'm Grant Whitfield, and I'll be reading you Iron and Silk, The Women's Suffrage Movement in America, 1848-1920, by Margaret Elspeth Harrington. Let's begin. Progajui, a half-century campaign. The story of women's suffrage in America is the story of a half-century argument, an argument about who counts as a citizen, about whether democracy means what it says it means, about the distance between the ideals a nation proclaims and the rights it is willing to extend. It began with a small group of women and men at a Methodist chapel in Seneca Falls, New York, in July 1848, and it ended 72 years later when the 19th Amendment was ratified and nearly 22 million American women became eligible to vote in the November 1920 elections. 72 years. The length of that struggle is the first thing that needs to be understood. Most of the women who gathered at Seneca Falls did not live to vote. Elizabeth Cady Stanton died in 1902, 18 years before the amendment that her Declaration of Sentiments had set in motion. Susan B. Anthony died in 1906, watching suffrage succeed in states but failing at the national level, delivering at her last public address the words that became the movement's declaration of faith: failure is impossible. They were right that it was not impossible. They were wrong that they would see it. The women who won the vote in 1920 were the grandchildren of the women who demanded it in 1848. They had organized, marched, lobbied, been jailed, been force-fed when they went on hunger strikes in prison, and been dismissed, mocked and condemned by a society that told them repeatedly that the ballot was not their business. They persisted anyway, and they prevailed. This is their story. The Rotes of Woman's Rights, 1848-1869. Chapter 1. Seneca Falls. The Declaration of Sentiments, 1848. On July 19, 1848, a small advertisement appeared in the Seneca County Courier announcing a convention to discuss the social, civil, and religious condition and rights of woman, to be held 2 days later at the Wesleyan Methodist Chapel in Seneca Falls, New York. The advertisement had been placed by Elizabeth Cady Stanton, a 32-year-old housewife and reformer, along with Lucretia Mott, Jane Hunt, Marianne McClintock, and Martha Coffin Wright. None of them had organized a public meeting before. None of them had significant experience in public speaking or political organizing. What they had was a shared conviction, formed over tea at the Hunt family home in Waterloo, that the time had come to say publicly what they had been saying privately for years, that the legal, social, and political subordination of American women was unjust and must change. The convention drew approximately 300 people, women and men, abolitionists and reformers, farmers and tradespeople, from across the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York. The organizers had prepared a document modeled on the Declaration of Independence, replacing "all men are created equal" with "all men and women are created equal," and replacing the list of grievances against King George III with a list of 18 grievances against the laws and customs that oppressed American women. They called it the Declaration of Sentiments. The Declaration was a radical document by any measure. It cataloged the legal disabilities under which American women lived with forensic precision. A married woman had no legal existence separate from her husband. She could not own property, enter contracts, or retain her own wages. She could not sue or be sued in her own name. Husbands had legal control over their children. Mothers had none. Women could not serve on juries. They could not attend most colleges or universities. They were barred from most professions. In most states, they could not vote on any question whatsoever, from local school board elections to the choice of president. The list of grievances concluded with a series of resolutions demanding equal rights in law, education, employment, and religion. 11 of the 12 resolutions passed unanimously. The 12th, calling for women's right to vote in state and federal elections, passed only after an impassioned argument by Frederick Douglass, the escaped enslaved person and abolitionist leader who had come to Seneca Falls and who argued that the ballot was the foundation on which all other rights depended. Even with Douglass's advocacy, the suffrage resolution passed by only a narrow margin. Even the women who had organized the convention were not all certain that demanding the vote was wise. It seemed, to many of them, too ambitious, too far beyond what their contemporaries would accept. The reaction to Seneca Falls was exactly as mixed as the organizers had feared. Newspapers mocked the convention with a ferocity that revealed how threatening its demands were. James Gordon Bennett's New York Herald predicted